Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your dirtbag chic Staten Island boyfriend of music news and criticism. I'm your host, Joe Coscarelli, filling in for John Caramonica, who is on a much needed vacation. Is Ariana Grande, No Tears Left to Cry, one of the big songs of the summer. By the time you're hearing this, Ariana will have another number one album, the biggest album in the country right now. And she also has maybe the number one couple in the country right now, Ariana Grande and Pete Davidson of SNL, paparazzi faves, internet darlings. Big season for Ariana Grande to discuss her career, what got us to this point, where she is now. I've convened a little roundtable of outsiders, two first-time podcasters, Nolan Feeney, digital features editor at Billboard, joining us. Thanks for coming. Another first-timer, we have Josh Duboff here. He is a senior writer at Vanity Fair, who wrote a little bit about Ariana this week.
I haven't used an uppercase letter all day in preparation for this.
Yes,
ready to go.
Unless you're writing God.
Unless God, right.
God is capitalized. Right. And R.E.M. because it's a Beyonce song.
Right.
So that, you know, capital
God-related Beyonce,
yes,
right.
Exactly. And to my right, Lindsay Zolads, you've been here before.
I've been here before and I'm back.
A veteran of the podcast. So Ariana Grande, suddenly one of the most famous people in the world, or not so suddenly?
I think it took a while, but she is the third most followed person on Instagram.
Behind Selena Gomez.
Selena Gomez and Cristiano Ronaldo.
Cristiano Ronaldo, yes.
That were the soccer guy.
Yeah, as I called him.
Yeah.
The fact that he can stand up together to these massive pop stars with teen fans is like pretty impressive.
Yeah, he does have really nice thigh muscles.
Yes,
so
true.
I think it's that she just needs to work on her thigh muscles.
I'm interested in talking about Ariana as the sort of preeminent female pop star of this moment in terms of the next generation. You know, when you think of the last 10 years of top 40, obviously you have your Beyoncés and Rihannas and they're still thriving, but they've sort of achieved an echelon above the upper echelon. You know what I mean? They're sort of in this untouchable phase of their careers and have just put out such strong work that I think, you know, they're both classics and contemporary at the same time. But then you have, you know, your Lady Gaga's, your Katy Perry's, your Taylor Swift's. And, you know, we've seen some disappointing showings from, I think, the people who were used to coming with the blockbuster pop albums of the year. So I'm interested in what you all think of how Ariana has managed to sort of bide her time until she could, you know, fill that void.
It does feel like the timing really all worked out so perfectly here for her. I think if like the VMAs was kind of a referendum on where pop is right now, if we want to look at it that way. I guess that might be debatable because what the VMAs mean now is kind of up in the air a little.
Right. By which you mean nobody famous,
yes,
showed up.
Exactly. But Ariana, I think that's actually kind of what's interesting about Ariana. I feel like as some people have kind of stepped back, like Selena Gomez was kind of, you know, coming out with a lot of stuff and has sort of been more recessive lately, I feel like, or like Miley's recent album didn't really have any of the pop smashes we were used to from her from before. I feel like Ariana really has sort of like been the one who's moved into the spot and kind of been like, I'm here, I'll do this. And it felt that way to me at the VMAs a little bit. She was sort of the only like pop girl there.
She was like the A++++.
Yeah, the one they like cut to during the like every reaction shot. And obviously we can talk about Pete later, but I feel like, I think Lindsay said before this, she's gotten like very good at being a celebrity this year, which I think is also a big part of things as well. It's like, the interest in her and Pete dovetailing with the album dovetailing with everyone else sort of backing away a little bit. So it feels like a lot coming together perfectly for kind of like her to be like, all right, I'm here, I'll do this.
Right. So she's 25 years old. This is her fourth album. You hear a sort of maybe a self-assuredness in this that you haven't gotten from, you know, sort of the generation right below her. You're like Hayley Kiyoko's and maybe your Halsey's and Alessia Cara's. Like, she's been at it more. So, like, does one of you guys want to give maybe a little summary of Ariana up to this point? How she became this pop princess that she is?
I mean, I didn't really pay attention to her until, what was it, 2014 or 2015, the year of Problem, mm-hmm. and the year that Iggy Azalea was on Top of the World, which feels so, so long ago.
I was shocked when I thought, when I remembered that Iggy was on Problem. I had forgotten that. Yeah.
And I kind of, for some reason before that, she had just kind of escaped my radar. And then I don't know what it was, but suddenly it was like she was kind of inescapable for me. Like, Problem was everywhere, and then it was Break Free. And I felt like, I think the biggest difference between like back a couple of years ago and now, like, I think, you know, you can have the big hits and the huge tours. And I think that the things like the Celebrity Romance and, you know, the sort of the backstory of Manchester, those are the kind of things that just push the, like, just over the top of like peak celebrity. Mm-hmm. But she sort of already had kind of the material there. And then there was sort of this extra celebrity context around it that I think is what has like gotten her to like peak stardom now.
Right, so she started as a Nickelodeon star, right?
Like, yeah.
What's the show?
Sam and Cat. Well, she was on Victorious first.
And then Sam and Cat was the spinoff. Yeah, so she comes from the similar school as like a Selena Gomez or a Demi Lovato or whatever, where, you know, she has this sort of built-in, extremely intense young fan base that has followed her from the beginning, right? And then when she comes on the scene, her debut album, Yours Truly, was 2013. And that's sort of like what? Like a Mariah Monkey, right?
Yeah,
like,
I think it was entirely produced by Babyface. They were trying to kind of put her into this more old-fashioned, like straight-up R&B mold. A lot of people called her Baby Mariah at first. She was very tiny and still is. It's not really...
Hasn't grown
at all.
Ariana,
ponytail maybe. Yeah,
the bank account, yes.
The ponytail,
stature, no.
A little bit.
Right.
For the first couple years of her career, there was kind of a question mark and some pivoting of like how to market her and who exactly she was. That is pretty standard coming out of the Nickelodeon and or Disney star matures into like an adult person. So she had this fan base, and I think that first album did debut at number one and like had a hit single.
Yeah,
I think the one was Mac Miller.
Let's listen to it a little bit. It's called The Way. Mm-hmm. It features Mac Miller, who would go on to become her, quote, toxic ex-boyfriend. And yeah, it's just, I remember listening to the song when it came out and just being like, Mariah must be human. That was The Way. That was Ariana Grande's first big single. Nolan, the album you're talking about, My Everything, with Problem, with Break Free, her big Zed thing, that sort of puts her in this EDM-ish lane, right? Like the dance pop of maybe like 5 years ago.
Yeah, I remember a lot of jokes about My Everything trying to be everything, that there was like the dance pop moment, and then you have the like duet with The Weeknd, and there's sort of like, it was sort of, I think, in the coming out of the Nickelodeon machine again, the like, I'm going to try everything and see what sticks. And you know, I think Bang Bang is on there too. The Jessie J, Nicki Minaj.
And there's a ballad written by Harry Styles. I just love that fact. It's like a piano ballad.
I don't recall.
I guess I am an Aryan eater. I don't know how to say it, but.
And then there's a Kashmir Cat song on there.
Yeah.
And like, it's just sort of, there was a lot of like interesting ideas on there. And then there were ones that were less interesting. But that was like, I felt like that had the sort of the blockbuster hit power and star power, but it was still kind of like, just still kind of testing the waters and seeing like what is going to work.
Yeah, and I remember the Weeknd song being a sort of pivotal moment for both of them, right? Love Me Harder, and it's like he's getting to be on this Nickelodeon girl's sort of like getting to cross over into mainstream top 40. This is still when he's like 2 a.m. Coke fiend music, or whatever you want to call it. And so he gets to do this romantic duet, and she gets to do this song with like BDSM undertones and say like, I'm sexy under my bunny ears. And if in the moment I bite my lip, baby, in that moment you know this is something bigger than us and be humbleless. Give me a reason to believe it. Cause if you And then you get Dangerous Woman, right? Which, how do you guys think back on the Dangerous Woman era of Ariana?
I think of that. I thought that was her arrival moment too. I mean, we were talking about like, when did she sort of hit her peak? Like for me, that was the one where my everything was kind of the warm up, and Dangerous Woman was like, okay, I get it. I get the vision. I see it, and I'm here for it.
When I went back to Dangerous Woman before we were doing this today, I was really, there was such good stuff on Dangerous Woman that I'd sort of forgotten about, but I do feel like Sweetener feels like it was just handled so much better in terms of the rollout and sort of the presentation of it and the visuals and just sort of the whole combination of things. Whereas Dangerous Woman felt a little bit like, I feel like in retrospect, it seems kind of like she had a lot of great stuff there, but I don't know. It seems like the celebrity visuals, sort of everything else, the aesthetic she had going on. Like there was that Catwoman thing she was trying to do.
Latex bunny.
It was like
the bunny.
And it was,
you know, it was like what? I don't know what, like how that tied into everything, but it was sort of the like marking visual identity for the album. It felt to me like she was like, the music was great, but I feel like she wasn't sure yet, like where she fit in as like the pop star Ariana Grande, maybe.
Right. And then she sort of had this defining moment that she didn't ask for, right? So she's on tour in May of 2017 in Manchester, concert finishes, and in the lobby on the way out, there's a suicide bombing, and 22 people died. I think hundreds of people were injured. And all of a sudden, she's thrust into this other role, right? Where she's tied to a tragedy and she's sort of made to answer for it. And at least for me, I found that whole period and what followed, especially the charity concert that she threw, One Love Manchester, it really showed that she was going to tackle this thing like head on and with optimism. I remember watching the show. I was actually on vacation. I was watching it like streaming on a cell phone, like, you know, and she's bringing out all these big pop stars and she's performing her hits. Like she's not sort of, you know, obviously it was very emotional, but she wasn't like moping. And then she closes the show with Somewhere Over the Rainbow. Somewhere. How did this Manchester tragedy sort of frame what we would expect Ariana to do, you know, in the year to come, and what would become this album Sweetener? What direction did you think she was going to go in?
Well, I think part of what was so horrifying in the aftermath of that is her audience was associated with young girls, like, and you know, as the news was coming out about who was injured and everything like that, this idea of it felt like an attack on children. And that was interesting because I think her fan base in some ways was like evolving and older people were getting into her. But the kind of takeaway was, oh my God, someone bombed an Ariana Grande concert. There must be a bunch of little kids there.
And there were.
And there were. Yeah. And just that the kind of images of like parents looking for their children. It was really just terrible. And that seemed to be the idea that she represented in the culture.
I guess I'm curious, you know, when these singles started rolling out, right, you hear No Tears Left to Cry, which is the song we heard at the top of the show. And it starts on this sort of somber note. And then, you know, 15 seconds later, you're like back on the dance floor. And I think it took a lot of willpower and sort of like inner artistic strength to not make a really weepy album. This mm-hmm. is the total opposite of maybe what you would expect someone to record after they've had this traumatic experience in their career. I'm wondering, like, did you all expect to get the sort of torch songs, piano ballad album? Because Sweetener is very much not that.
I wasn't sure what to expect because of what you're saying. I think there's like the tendency. I actually was watching, I think it was the Ebro interview she did last week where he asked her about Manchester and she like broke down. I don't know if you guys saw it. It was like really intense and she was kind of just like openly sobbing. So it's clear she could have like channeled that into an album that was really, you know, I can only imagine. There's no way to imagine like the darkness of what you would feel going through what she went through for that whole situation. But I guess I kind of commend, or like I'm kind of amazed that she was able to make an album this buoyant and sort of hopeful. Mm-hmm. And like, there's obviously like a melancholy to it sort of. And I think, what was the kind of, interview she did earlier this year where she said it was like her bleeding heart with a trap beat behind it or whatever.
Yes, yeah. Like, I think she was tweeting about that.
I feel like she tried to figure out a way to like do something for her fans that was going to be hopeful and optimistic. And I don't know, like to be up for that challenge at her age and with what she's like dealing with as a public persona is kind of incredible. I mean, that's actually to me almost the point up until this point where I've been like, wow, like I'm kind of in awe of that she was able to like do this.
Mm-hmm. Lindsay, you wrote a really nice review of this album for The Ringer. Can you talk a little bit about sort of who made it and what it sounds like?
It kind of sounds just like a Pharrell record or like a right. Neptune's record from like 2002. Which we Pharrell will definitely get to the highs half? And lows. I think he did 7 tracks.
It feels like more though, because he's so over with the ad libs going yeesh on like every other song.
It's also front loaded with his stuff. There are Max Martin songs, and I think there's another producer too that she worked with heavily on it.
Ilya, who is sort of a student of Max Martin, is all over this album and has made some of her previous hits. But yeah, it's mostly Pharrell's fingerprints.
Yeah,
right?
And those, just the way that the track list is structured, like all the Pharrell songs are kind of side A. And the Max Martin stuff feels a little bit buried. I think he had a hand in both of the singles. But the singles in some ways feel a little like outliers on this record too. And I think some of you might disagree, so I want to get into this, but I feel like the Pharrell stuff sounds a lot more forward-thinking than the Max Martin stuff on this album, and that feels interesting to me, and that feels like an interesting realization that she seems to be having, too, in associating herself so heavily with this Pharrell stuff that sounds very Pharrell-y, but I think it has really signature personality notes of her that we haven't really seen a producer give her the space to explore yet.
Let's listen to Blazed, which is the second song on the album after an a cappella intro in which she sings a Four Seasons song. Is that right?
Like a little snippet.
Yeah, just a little snippet. But then you get right into the Pharrell. Nolan, what do you make of Pharrell's production on this song and this album?
I understand kind of why she would choose him, because I think that in a way his production style makes sense in terms of kind of bridging the gap between like the sort of lush I Live in a Cloud kind of nostalgic R&B that is one side of her with the kind of more dancier, harder hip hop edge. My reaction while listening to it was the week that Sweetener came out was also the week that Madonna turned 60. And I spent a lot of time revisiting old Madonna records, particularly Hard Candy, which is a record that she made with Pharrell. And I think that that, you know, there's a song on the on Hard Candy called Candy Shop in particular that has the very like sounds like Pharrell banging on buckets kind of like plastic paint buckets kind of sound. And I also, you know, a couple days after the album, maybe even the same day, like a Beyonce version of one of the songs on the Ariana album, it's R.E.M. And I think it was released under a different, or was titled something else when it was a Beyonce version.
Written by Pharrell.
Yeah. And then I think even the Migos Stir Fry beat is like an old Pharrell beat. And so I'm just like, is he trying to get rid of hard drive space? Like, is he just like unloading all these 10-year-old beats? And I think that, you know, when I heard No Tears Left to Cry, I was like, I think of her as a sort of blockbuster pop star. And this song is kind of weird enough that I'm like, oh, maybe this is the album that she can really sort of like push pop in different directions and introduce trends and try different things. And then I feel like some of the Pharrell beats, some of them are really cool. Some of them I think are like R.E.M. I really do like as a highlight. I think Blazed, I was like, I feel like she deserves better than something that sounds like it could have been on Hard Candy 10 years
or
ago.
Or the Gwen Stefani first solo album. Like I think you get bits of that.
Or like Justified era.
Some Justified stuff.
Shout out to the Man of the Woods.
That one was a less successful Pharrell partnership maybe. But I'm interested in the way she sort of minimized her voice on this album. I think if people know about Ariana Grande, like if you talk to your mom's friend about Ariana Grande, the most likely thing you're going to hear is like, oh, that little girl has such a great voice, right? Like she's always on the Tonight Show, sort of like, or SNL doing her impressions of people, doing her Whitney, her Adele, she can really sing, but that's not on this album at all. There are no vocal runs really on this album. And I wonder why we think she made that choice in favor of these airy, light, quick paced Pharrell beats, especially.
I'm so glad she made that choice. I think it's stylistically where I wanted her to get. And I think there is no Harry Styles penned piano ballad on this record. And I frankly...
There's no ballad at all, really.
No. And I think that's a great realization for her that, you know, she does have a very nice voice. A lot of people do, though. And especially like I think her voice, when it's on the wrong track, can come off as a little maybe pageanty or a little singing competition-y. She's technically very good, but I don't think that's enough right now. It's there's so many people, especially in the era of still somehow we're still in the era of the televised singing competition.
Yes.
Good voices Deep. Are a dime a dozen. It's what are you going to do with it? What are you going to say with it? And how are you going to maybe play with that in the production styles that you can in pop music right now? So I think that's what elevates this record for me is that she stopped trying to prove what a good singer she is, because we know that, but she's interested in just exploring her voice and doing things with it that I think just free her up to show a lot more personality and show some individuality in her voice.
I guess you get some capital V vocals on like God is a Woman, which is, I guess, the second single. But then I'm also interested in her sort of like in the dexterity she shows. You know, some of it can come across to me as a little bit like you can hear her miming the Pharrell reference track a little bit in some of her flow patterns. But in a song like Sweetener, the title track, Ariana gets a lot of jokes on the internet for not enunciating well, and it can still be really hard for me, at least, to understand what she's saying in places. But just the way she's sort of floating on the beat, I was impressed by it, at least. Let's listen to a little Sweetener, and then maybe, Josh, you could tell me what you think of it.
When life deals us cards, make everything taste like it is so.
Sweetener is interesting to me. I felt, I like you, I think I had to listen, I had to like pull up the genius.com to like actually understand like what was going on in it. And there's that like weird sort of like bop it, whip it, you know, like, yes. I was like, what's exact, you know, like
combined
a wind
with an
up,
extended baking metaphor.
Yeah, the baking metaphor. There's like a lot going on there. And then I guess I felt like in this album, Sweetener was a good example of this. Maybe I felt a little bit more like she was trying. There's almost like an Instagramminess to the whole thing to me. It felt very like ephemeral. I felt like there was a lot in this album that felt like I could listen to it over and over and I wouldn't actually be able to like recite a lyric back to you necessarily. But like Sweetener is a little bit like that to me, where I felt like there was a lot of mood going on and it felt like there was maybe a little bit less of the big chorus. Her, what you were saying, Lindsay, before about like, we know she has the big voice. It felt like she was now focusing a little bit more on like, you could be listening to this while doing whatever. But, you know, I think it felt like the effect, she was going more for an effect or a vibe in general than I'd heard on any of the previous albums, which I guess is appealing. It seems to be what she wanted. And I guess I think it works well in some places.
I feel like a little bit of what you're tiptoeing up to is like the new found coolness of Ariana Grande. And I think that dovetails obviously with her new relationship. So, you know, what is Pete Davidson doing for the Ariana Grande brand? What is Ariana doing for the Pete Davidson brand? And how did this become a power couple?
I kind of feel like they're the song of the summer. Like, you know, yeah. Like Ariana and Pete. Like
Pete
Davidson is the song of the summer.
The song Pete Davidson or the Pete Davidson Pete Davidson?
I meant actual Pete.
I think it's
but
a
like,
tie between
thing,
both.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So there is a song on Sweetener called Pete Davidson.
I feel like before Pete, I'm not sure if this, we obviously have talked about it. She was this huge celebrity. She has all these Instagram followers. That was before Pete. But I feel like now this relationship in particular feels like this, like what people want to talk about at bars and stuff, and like what your friends want to text you about. And like, yeah. I don't know, there's something about the two of them together, like what they wear, the lollipop photo, I feel like was all over Twitter and Instagram for like weeks of when like Ariana has that lollipop and she's like looking up at him. Mm-hmm. There's something about the, like the way they both kind of like are embracing like streetwear trends, and like Pete has everything, like, you know, like the little fanny pack and all that stuff. I feel like it has, as you said, just sort of like enhanced her coolness, or like there was something maybe a little bit like theater kid about her, and there still is, obviously. I feel like Pete has helped maybe, I don't know if he's helped, but like just the relationship has changed, I think, how she's perceived a little bit in a way that feels kind of like interesting.
I think the conversation about Ariana and Pete has also changed so much over a very short time.
Right.
I
remember, we've gone through a lot of phases.
At one time, quickly, feeling genuine concern about like, maybe this is going too fast.
And the tattoos. That came out of...
And now it's like, when is the wedding?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, exactly.
And I was surprised at how much I enjoyed Pete Davidson, the song on the album. I was sort of like, I mean, it just, like, for me, like, it felt like the equivalent to, I mean, she did get the actual, like, tattoo to signify their relationship, but putting an interlude named after your significant other feels like you're just going to regret that. But the more that I've spent time with the album and reading interviews, that she's on this very life is short, you know, you never know what's going to happen, just follow your heart kind of thing, where I think that instead of being like, you know, you need this to be this perfect testament to your life for the rest of time, this perfect statement and timeless, that she's kind of embracing that this is a very particular snapshot of a very particular time in her life, and why not lean into it 100%.
I thought you into my life. What? Look at my mind. Yeah. No better place or a time. Yeah. How they align. Universe must have my back. Fell from the sky into my lap. And I know you know that you my soulmate and all that. I'm like, ooh.
Yeah, I think I'm like weirdly moved by calling a song Pete Davidson.
I feel like you describe in your piece this roller coaster of emotions, right?
Yeah.
They first get together. Pete Davidson is, you know, he's a writer on SNL. He's in some skits, but not very many. He's super young. I think he started there when he was, what, like 20 or something?
Yeah, if not younger, yeah.
And then all of a sudden they're tattooing themselves. But take us on a little bit of that journey that the celebrity watchers among us have been on over the past few months.
Stage one was puzzled. I was like, oh, okay. Because also he had been dating Cassie David, Larry David's daughter, for a while. And they were sort of not an A-list celeb couple, but
maybe
an
underground celebrity couple.
Yeah. I don't want to put a letter grade on it. Yeah. I like it as under. But so there was kind of, I think people were like, sad that they broke up. Not that I know any of these people and care personally. I wish them all the best. So it was kind of like confusion, shock, puzzlement. And then I think when they announced the engagement, I was worried, like, these two kids are doing something. But like, I became my mother and was like, are you sure you want to do this, Ariana? And the tattoos. And he got like a whole cover up of his Cassie tattoos. But then somewhere along the line, and I think it was kind of the way that they were playing with the paparazzi a little bit, these photos of them, just how happy they looked, and finally naming the song Pete Davidson, that I was like, I am all in. This is the only love that's real. And yeah, and I also think, I mean, I get it, because she is funny and kind of weird. And I think he obviously is, but he brings out that side of her, that she was a comic actress on Sam and Cat. She actually was really funny on that show and just kind of played this loopy.
And she's been
weirdo.
Good when she's on SNL.
Yeah.
Too.
She's, and her talk show appearances, like she does these comedic impressions of other singers. I think she's very self-aware and very funny and sort of conscious of her own image in a way that people don't realize, because she looks like a child and has a high ponytail and has for like 7 years. But I think there is this sort of wisdom beyond her years that this relationship finally allows her to play into. And also, We should talk about how weird she is, too, because remember the story about how she saw demons from like 5 years
she
ago?
She loves ghosts, right?
She loves ghosts. She's like very macabre. Just there's always been a weirdness to her that I've been like wanting her to fully embrace. And I feel like the whole Pete stuff is helping with that. And I'm just like, yes, get weirder, girl.
Well, and it's also manifested in her dating history, right? Like, I don't want to lean too much on her, on the tabloid aspect of her, but like, it's been a huge part of her career. And she was with Mac Miller previous to Pete Davidson. She dated Big Sean for a little while. If you really want to go deep, there's an amazing Oh No, They Didn't post that timelines all of her relationships from when she first got famous.
Is that like Want the Boy Band, the Wanted guy, yes, in there somewhere?
Exactly. Yeah. So that's always been a part of her career. And I guess the one scandal she had previously was also with a little bit of a had a dirtbag boyfriend aspect to it. And that's Donut Gate. So for those that don't remember, didn't know who Ariana Grande was at that point, who wants to do the pleasure of recapping Donut Gate?
I haven't watched the video in too recently, but I know she walks in with this backup dancer she's involved with at the time. She, you know, it's like, when exactly was this in the album cycle? It must have been before Dangerous. It was before Dangerous Woman. Yeah, it was like between 2 and 3, right?
I think that's right.
Yeah.
She's at an LA donut shop.
Yeah, she's at an LA donut shop.
Captured by security cam footage.
And she samples the taste of some donuts, I
guess. She's dared to do it, right?
Yeah.
Yes, that's true. That's an important distinction.
Because I feel like the song Bad Decisions on Dangerous Woman is a song that is like the closest point she gets to
talking about, to talking the donut. Right. And she also...
Bad Decisions, parentheses, licking donuts.
Yes.
Parentheses, I'm sorry, Mark.
I'm sorry I licked the donut. Yeah, and then the other aspect that she got heat for was, I think maybe she saw a donut that was particularly indulgent and she said, I hate America. Right? That was like somehow taken as an affront. I mean, in 2018, you look back on this as a celebrity
scandal.
She was
ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
But you're also
just America
like,
too.
You're also just like, how was anybody even a little bit ruffled by this? I mean, even Miley twerking at the VMAs, you know, now just seems so, you know, so minor, but this was really nothing, right? Like,
yeah, it was like around the same time Justin Bieber peed in a bucket too. It was just like, get a better car. But I do, Donut Gate is one of my favorite celebrity controversies of recent vintage. The reaction to it was completely disproportionate. And the way she had to sort of apologize several different times, right, and then like revise her apology because it wasn't enough. I think if anything, her reaction to the aftermath of the Manchester bombing kind of put that in perspective and was just like, come on, that was not even a scandal. And she maybe fumbled that a little bit. But then when her mettle was tested in a bigger way, in a real way, then as opposed to licking donuts. Yeah, I think she just has really put that whole part behind her.
Yeah, she seems to be a very pure celebrity. There's minimal, even if there's some things you might like scratch your head at, like there's minimal drama, right? And I think that lets people consume her music in a pretty baggage-free way. And I think maybe she made the perfect album for that, right? Where you can just sort of have a good time with these songs and you don't have to bring her sort of IRL behavior to the album.
I also feel like a lot of artists now are obviously great at this, but like her social media handling, I've always been kind of impressed by. She's very, especially now, like she's so transparent. Like,
super
like
engaging
people,
with her fans.
Yeah, like people ask her like very specific things that like so many like artists now would never, you know, like why did you name Pete Davidson instead of Pete? Or like, you know, things that are like very specific about like album titles and specific like choices, and she kind of like engages and like really gives like, you know, like she just is like, yeah, no big deal, just the answer, which I find also kind of helps in that whole kind of, you can just focus on the music a little bit with her, I think.
Yeah. And she talks really candidly about her anxiety on social media too. And I think that's something that she incorporates in a couple of the songs on this record. The song Breathe In is kind of directly about that, which I feel like that's going to be the next single.
Let's listen to Breathe In.
Some days things just way too much of my energy. I look up and the whole room's spinning. You take my cares away. I get so overcomplicate. People tell me to medicate. Feel my blood running. Swear the sky's falling. I don't know about this. Fabricated. Time goes by and I.
I am curious what you all think if these sort of real life tabloid narratives, you know, the Pete Davidson stuff, the new love, the obviously the tragedy of Manchester, and then the sort of, you know, blooming from a child star thing that you saw in Donutgate. How much of that do you actually think is in the content of the album and the songs? And how much of it do you think is just being projected onto them?
I mean, there are as many songs on this record, if not more, than are about Pete Davidson that feel like they're kind of about Mac Miller. right. There are some bad boyfriend songs on this.
Yeah. Better Off. I was like, oh, wow, this is like clearly about Mac, not, mm-hmm. yeah.
And like not to ascribe completely the autobiographical, but like it's totally about him. Obviously, right. like the relationship with Pete is still new, even though they're engaged and soulmates and will be together forever. She was working on this record much longer than they have been together. So it does feel like something of a projection to say that it's all about him. But it does all feel kind of like it's coming out of a similar mood and a similar like moment for her. It I think it coheres in a way, like you were saying, my everything was just really hodgepodge and all over the place. This just coheres and feels like it's all coming from the same artist. And maybe Dangerous Woman was like that too, but that feels new for her and sort of what I think is working and making her a more just cohesive, legible persona.
It doesn't feel like she's like dancing around. Like Pete Davidson is a song that is very explicit about what it's about.
Right.
It, for me, you know, it doesn't feel like you're getting like details of it. Like it doesn't feel like I'm eavesdropping on a private conversation, but it also doesn't
right.
feel
it's
like
not Lemonade.
Yeah. And it doesn't feel like she's dancing around it either. I think like for me, it's a lot about how all these things in her life make her feel in a way that it's all the tabloidy stuff, all the outside stuff is not the focus, but it informs what she's talking about, or it seems to inform that in a very like genuine way and not in a like, let me tease you and you can parse the song for clues about whether it's about this. It's sort of like that's all that stuff is like not really the focus. It's kind of background noise that explains how she got to this point, which is all about like loving life and saying yes to life and just like focusing on the joy in a way I find very contagious.
I think that's a good
it's
point.
It's not Reputation.
Yes. Yeah. Well, okay. You got what I was trying yeah. to yes. decide whether or not to say.
I decoded.
But and I think it's part of that comes from, you know, what we know about Ariana's process is that she's not, she co-writes a lot of her songs, but and she says, you know, more than ever on this album, but she's not a songwriter in the traditional sense. She's not coming to these albums necessarily to get her innermost thoughts out. She's a, you know, she's a musician, she's a voice, she's a performer, I think, but she doesn't seem, at least up to this point in her career, to have that sort of like Lord or Taylor Swift burning desire to
professional, yeah.
to write the songs.
Yeah. And I think on that note, like a song that actually is really interesting to me, a choice that is made that not a lot of people have been talking about is the Imogen Heap cover.
Mm.
I was hoping we'd get to this.
Good. I just want to talk about Imogen Heap. And I do remember I watched something like years ago, Ariana was on MTV, like around my everything, and they asked what her all-time favorite singer was, and she was like, Imogen Heap.
Yes,
like,
she's
what?
Always,
yeah.
I will
she's
say,
a stan.
She has always rode for Imogen Heap.
Yeah.
In Cara Monica's first profile of her for The Times, she talked about her love of Imogen Heap, that she like bought something to record herself to try to like be her, essentially.
And her early YouTube videos, yeah. Ariana's, are really sort of playing around with like looping and just adding effects to her voice. So there's always kind of been, yeah, I feel like Imogen Heap is this like silently influential on, because she co-wrote one of the songs on 1989 too. So mm-hmm. Taylor Swift
Clean.
Is like,
yeah, the album closer.
But I find the song Good Night and Go that she covers, it's a really straightforward cover. It's basically just like the way Rihanna covers Tame Impala on Anti is just like, I'm just going to sing the song that I like and I want you to like it too. And that feels, even though she didn't write that song, that feels like an incredibly personal decision and one that probably someone would have tried to talk her out of like having that on the album because
like,
it's already
why?
15 songs yeah. long. But yeah. that is the segue into Pete Davidson, I just find even more sweet. Not to
let's,
belabor
let's,
the
let's
metaphor, but yeah, okay.
I just feel like there has to be some mashup soon of like Good Night and Go with the Pete Ariana images. I'm like waiting for that to happen.
Yes, that's a YouTube montage
waiting to happen.
Yeah, definitely.
Tell me why you gotta look at me that way. You know what it does to me.
So there are two main guests on this album outside of the spectral presence of Pharrell on his backing tracks. And that's Nicki Minaj on, what's that song called?
The Light Is Coming.
The Light Is Coming. Yeah, which is not my favorite because of that sort of intrusive vocal sample. And then you have Missy Elliott on Borderline. Once you taste my ice cream, I bet you won't never leave.
Got me feeling so out of place. Think about you all of my days. Wish you'd chew on me like fresh grapes. Not trying to cuff you or crowd your space. I'm trying to find cute words just to say. Dang, you fine and look at that face. At the borderline beside me, you lay. Baby, I just want you to be
I feel like a Missy versus, like, you know, you've made it when you can get her to come do a song with you. Like, she doesn't do it for everybody. She, like, hasn't put out an album in since, like, 2005, I want to say. That I feel like you have to kind of earn your Missy guest verse. And I was a little underwhelmed. As much as I love her and was expecting, like, wanting great things from her, it sort of felt like a throwaway to me. It's a cool British accent, I guess, that she tries, but I it's so short, it goes by so quickly.
Yeah,
like,
and it's weird to have to blaspheme, you know, Missy Elliott, but like I don't really know what this is adding to the piece.
Other than like I got Missy on my track.
Yeah, sure.
It's a flex.
It's definitely a flex.
I think it's the least good of the Pharrell produced songs on this record by far.
And Nicki?
Hey yo, trophy wife, out you won me. Until you had to find out it's one me. Now you benched all your bum knee. Now I'm the bad guy, call me Chun-Li. Cause you were slipping, yep, you clumsy. And everything I peep, can't just unsee. Zips tea, and it's unsweet. With respect, bud, girl, when me done speak. Now we shooting a shot like drive-by. Why you had to make me go call up my side guy? Can't let the F-boy F up my nice vibe. Yo, Ariana, come let me get you a high five.
The light is coming to give back everything the darkness stole. The light is coming to give back everything the darkness stole. The light is coming to give back everything the darkness stole. The light is coming to give back everything the darkness stole.
It's been a long week of Nicki. Queen Radio probably still going as we were recording.
This is our own version of Queen Radio.
Yeah, welcome to Queen Radio.
We were talking about this a little bit before, but the Nicki Ariana dynamic is interesting to
me. So label mates, they share a team in the office buildings, but they've been on each other's songs, you know, for years now. So how has that developed and what has it become, Lindsay?
Oh boy. It's just rough to think about Nicki right now. Well, one quick thing before I answer that is that to just put it off even further. So in all the endless delays of the Nicki record Queen, which did end up coming out the week before this album, there was this moment when these two records got pushed to the same day. And I'm sure someone within the label was like, or maybe Nicki herself, like that was not going to be a good look. Although,
well, because you needed each of them to get their number one albums, right? cough, cough, cough.
Or would it have been a more elegant number two for Nicki if it had been to this and she could spin it as some sort of sisterhood thing rather than taking it out on Stormy, protect Stormy
right,
at
infant.
All costs. Yeah. So there's a lot going
Stormy's
on.
Stormy's plotting to figure out how to take Ariana down right now, I think.
Yeah. And you have sort of traded features, right? Ariana is on Bed from the Nicki Minaj album.
Yeah, which was a single that just went absolutely nowhere. And, you know, they have a long history of collaboration. There was Side to Side on the last record,
which was
I
a big
do
hit.
Really like.
Yeah.
And she was on the Pink Print as well. So they have had hits together and sort of songs that have worked to both of their advantage. But I think it's just a complete role reversal at this point, because I remember when Ariana was on the Pink Print song, which I'm blanking on the name of.
That right memorable, now. Huh?
Yeah.
Is it Get On Your Knees?
It's Get On Your Knees, which, as the title would suggest, was kind of a like, whoa moment for her. Like, ooh, dangerous woman. But now it feels like it almost felt like at that point, Ariana needed Nicki a little bit more than vice versa to kind of show another side of her, this more mature sexual side. And now it feels like Nicki needs Ariana much more than the other way around.
Yeah, and I guess Ariana's use of rap in general has been interesting. Obviously, she has Pharrell here, but she sort of brings him into her world maybe as much as he brings her. You know, they sort of meet in the middle. But then there's like a more trap beat on Every Time on this album, which, you know, I don't know that she needs this. I don't. What do you think? I don't know that she needs rap verses on her album at this point in her career.
I was thinking about how the sort of the landscape of popular music has changed so much, or it feels like it has, in the 2 years since Dangerous Woman came out. That, you know, like these sort of, I think as you mentioned earlier, like Ariana was the only kind of big female pop star at the VMAs. I mean, you could kind of count Nicki, but she's pretty like rap only these days. And that the songs that are ruling the charts are like hip hop songs and rap artists. And that like the sort of big dance floor club banger from a female pop star doesn't seem to have the same currency that it used to. And so I think is like, you know, she's studying the charts and being like, how can I have maximum impact here and appeal to like what's happening? But it's interesting to think about kind of her existing in that world and seeing what parts of it can work for her and what parts not, because that seems to be what's ruling right now.
And she slid very well into a void that was there. It's been a pretty boring summer for pop music. Drake kind of has the song of the summer by default. Like, yeah. We all just shrugged and we're like, I guess it's him again. Like, you know, and even the sounds of pop radio right now are just kind of sad and numb. And, you know, everything sounds like Post Malone. And this record just feels really buoyant, like you said, and clear in a way that a lot of music on the radio isn't right now. So I think it's refreshing. It's different enough from everything else right now, but it also came at the time when she wasn't competing with Beyonce and Rihanna and whoever else was Taylor. You know, we needed it this summer in a lot of ways.
Before we get out of here, any other quick highlights, favorite moments from this album that we haven't touched on?
I just want to go back to the Imogene Heap song, and it makes me, when she gets to the bridge, it's the second verse maybe on this one, but the bridge on the original about like, we could be good, we could be great, like you sleep here and I'll sleep there, but maybe the heat will go out. Like, it just makes me want someone to pull Imogene Heap into a writing session, because her lyrics are so good. I'm like, I want you to do this all the time.
Josh?
I'm like all about breathing right now. Mm-hmm. It's like a really good workout song, if nothing else, you know? But also I feel like it's like what you were saying before. I feel like there's it gets really well at how she's, the like sort of new place she's found, where it feels like she can be a little bit relatable, a little bit vulnerable. It feels a little bit more like her and personal in a way that I feel like was maybe missing a little bit. Yeah.
And I think it'll be top 10 in no time, you
exactly.
know? And it's about anxiety attacks. Yeah, so who can't relate?
I really like Successful, which... kind of going off your workout music tip. I saw someone tweeting about this, but I think it's very real. She makes really good spin class songs.
Right.
Video. But I do feel like I hear Ariana in like the gym and in the spin class.
Oh my
and
God,
stuff.
Her
and
leading a Soul Cycle class or something would be
die.
A dream.
She definitely has the energy, right? Yeah, I feel like Successful, you get a real... She sort of lets down her hair, as it were, you know, and you really get to let her swag out a little bit and just be like, I'm hot, I'm young, I have a cool boyfriend. Like that, it's nice to hear. You know, it's less that theater kid sort of like, I have to appeal to everyone. And it just lets her luxuriate in winning.
And it's a real less is more song too. In the pit, like, she's holding back. She's not over singing. It's a really minimal beat, but she can hold it with her presence now, which I don't think she was able to do a couple records before.
Let's go out with Successful. That's our show. Thank you to my guests, Nolan, Josh, Lindsay. It's been very fun. I think everyone needs these Ariana songs in their ears at a time like this. Let's make summer last as long as possible. Labor Day is coming right up. You can listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. You can email us your thoughts at podcast@nytimes.com. You can subscribe to the podcast, Apple Music, Stitcher, wherever you get your audio content. And look out for, I hear we have merch coming. I hear we may have a live show coming. Podcast coming big in Q4 2018. Be prepared. Our producer is Pedro Rosado from Headstepper Media. And we will be back next week. Yeah.